Today's episode is a really fun talk with Nalin and Ola from Infuse about agile software development and automated testing and shifting quality to every part of the software development cycle. Welcome to Test & Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions. And that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics. I've got a couple people today on the podcast from Infuse, and it's a test automation. I think it's a test automation company. I've just learned a little bit about it, but I've got Nalin and Ola. Is that right?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about test automation, but before we get started, I'd like to know a little bit about both of you. So Nalin, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name's Nalin Harbu. I'm from a town called Leicester, which a few years ago was famous for winning the Premier League soccer title here against all the odds, and a small provincial club. Basically, I've been in London 20 years, educated in London, studied a master's degree, and I am the CEO of Infuse Consulting.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And Ola?
Hi, my name is Ola Omiyale, and I'm actually a newbie in software testing. My background is more in social sciences, but I was employed in Infuse, and now I'm I sell software testing tools. And yeah, I'm just here to learn and hear the new information that's out there.
Well, that's awesome. And Nalin is going to help us with learning more about test automation, and it's something I'm passionate about as well. So I'm really excited to hear somebody else's perspective. Well, let's jump into test automation. So are you the CTO or CEO? What's your title again?
I kind of have a couple of titles, Brian. You know, I'm what I call the CEO, but I don't do much executive work. It's more chief everything officer. So we are the 20-year-old startup, right? So, we're not a massive company. We're about 50 people between here and India. And I still take a very active role in terms of product development, in terms of looking at the market and the strategy and where we need to go as a business. And then, I get involved in the other bits, right? The sales, the marketing, what I call the everything bit. And then from time to time, I do a bit of executive work, right? But really, I would say I'm still in chief everything mode, instead of chief executive mode.
Okay. Well, have you been with Infuse for the whole duration?
I am, yeah. I'm one of the founders and the owner. So I started the business in a place called Canada Water in London 18 years ago in my lounge. And I'm actually sitting in our original office as we speak, which is my spare bedroom. We've now moved to the more modern climes of an area called Shoreditch, which is a bit of a hipster town and village, although abandoned at the moment during COVID times. But it's a bit of a fun part of town, a bit like your Meatpacker District in New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How did you get into test automation in the first place?
Bit of a funny journey, I think. I'm 47 year old, Brian. So, you don't start off a testing career when you're 27, 28, 29. I got into IT at a young age. You know, I was coding and stuff on the BBC Micro Model B. I don't know if you remember these machines in the US, but, there was coding in BASIC as a young lad, and then did a master's degree, and then was still coding in that. And then basically did a master's and thought, well, I'll become a developer. Then I'll become a CTO, and I'll become a CIO, and that'll be my career. And I was working in a town called Coventry, and I apologize to my West Midland friend from down the road, but I didn't like it, right? Not a very nice place. I've been in London 7 years, and I was desperate to get into London. So I applied for a job for a company based in the Northwest in a town called Preston, which is near Manchester. And they said they were opening a London office. So I went up there and I presented some ideas around componentization of software and APIs and how things will be plug and play. And they said, you can have the job. And I thought, yeah, this is great. They go, you're going to be a consultant. I go, that sounds great, being a consultant, 26 years old. And then they put me on this course for a product called Test Director. which, if anyone's been around testing long enough, is by a product by Mercury, which became Micro Focus today. And then I was like, damn, tester, right? Not what I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And so my father said to me, he goes to me, don't just discount it, right? He goes to me, you know, you might find a niche, so give it a go, right? Before you, you know, before you quit on day week one. So I gave it a few months and found the opportunities offered by, you know, tools like WinRunner, started working with embedded systems and then automated testing of embedded systems and working in automated testing of ticketing machines, ticketing gates, and all sort of interesting, fun coding, nerdy stuff, really. So I found a niche and I liked it, and it was complicated, it was challenging, and so I thought this is really, really good fun. And then the company I worked for, which was a pure play testing company, wanted to put me on manual test projects. I'd spend a lot of time writing scripts to automate it. So the sales guy and I would have lots of fights because I'd ruin all the billing, right, by automating the test. It'd be like, you're meant to do it manually. I'd be like, no, I've automated it. And I'm like going, well, you've ruined the billing. And I'd be like, well, got to, you know, don't put me on these projects. That should, kind of went on.
They should do it like you know, auto mechanics do, and just have a fixed hour per thing. Even if it only takes 5 minutes, it's billed as an hour or something like that.
Output-based testing, right?
Yeah.
You know, finish a job, it's, you know, whether it's in a month or a day, it's $500, right? Or pounds or whatever, right? Yeah, so this happened a few times. So I ended up climbing the testing ladder as a test manager, trying to create the revolution, going, every company I would join, you got to automate all your testing. And then obviously the rest of the program team would go, yeah, you can do that right at the end when we've screwed everything up, got a little bit of budget, do some automated regression tests. That was my frustration for many, many years, right, Brian? And I had visions, you know, like I could integrate this into, you know, old build tools like Ant, if you remember them back in the early 2000s and stuff like that. So those were the kind of things I was going, right, let's use these build tools. Let's integrate automated testing. Let's do load testing within the container and all this stuff. And no one really wanted to listen to that. They said, no, just test it at the end, right? And do your performance testing at the end and do your regression testing at the end.
Oh, dear. Okay.
And that was kind of, you know, the story of testing, really. I thought...
Now, around what time, when was this, or about what year?
So this would have been about 1998 to 2001.
Okay, you know, that sounds about right.
This was all going on, right? Yeah. Yeah, and so I started Infuse in February 2002.
Okay.
And the vision was really, right, an automated testing company. It will do performance testing. We'll hire technical people. We'll hire these people called solution engineers, and they will be a little bit of dev, technical testers. They'll be able to see the life cycle, and they'll be able to change and revolutionize the world. In small pockets, we were able to do that, right? But on the large program, at the large companies, at your Fortune 500, FTSE 100 companies, yet to toe the line with all the big system integrators, right?
It takes a long time to change the behavior of a big company.
It does, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then
the timing was interesting. If I remember right, late 90s, ideas like extreme programming and notions from Pragmatic and stuff were coming in, and lean programming and stuff like that were helping to legitimize software testing. Or automated testing, at least. And there were at least some efforts to do more automation in the development cycles.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, one of the jobs I did do in the late 90s was with a bunch of guys where we were practicing XP, doing pair programming, sitting down and working closely with developers and business people, what I would call early forms of Scrum, really, right? You know,
yeah.
Trying to work collaboratively. But, you know, that was in a startup environment, right? In the what I call the legacy environment, the corporate environment, it was very, very different.
Yeah, definitely. I know this interview isn't about me. Working for large companies, essentially small groups within large companies, pretty much my entire career started in 96. But the push for automation has been a developer effort, I think, because it's just a faster way to develop stuff. To automate your tests.
You're right, Brian. Yeah, it's definitely been a push. I think the modern developer, and there's been a lot of guys, you know, around that sort of vintage, around between 96 and 2000. You know, they're kind of around between 45 and 50 years old today, right? And there was a big push around trying to do sort of a TDD, right, test driven development, back in those days, right? Which is where we sat down and we would do the pair programming. We would look to design the tests earlier on, get involved with the business, and drive. You're right. Without the efforts of the developer community to promote automated testing, the business, by the time you know it gets testing, you need to automate. It's already too late, right? Because you've already shipped the code. The actual efficiencies early in the life cycle, right? Writing those API tests, those unit tests. So developers really had to get bought into this situation, right, to make it work, make it fly. And it's through that change in engagement, to be honest, that actually Infuse has had some more success, because we now engage with a community that speaks similar language, right? We engage with technical people. You know, our customer was a head of testing, a program test manager. Now our customer is a head of engineering.
Oh, interesting.
And that helps. And that head of engineering person is a strong believer of, okay, you do automated testing. I want to hear what you can help me with estates and frameworks and efficiencies and driving quality engineering. And those were stories that you didn't hear from your traditional test manager, right? Because he was receiving the waterfall model or the V model of testing would say one thing, but the reality is testers got ship code and the requirements, they had very little input into it, even though they should have been involved, right? They were like going, but the requirements are rubbish and the code's rubbish. Well, it doesn't matter. Just test it, right? It doesn't go live. It's going to be your fault.
I was always amused by the V model. So they basically take the waterfall model and then put a bend in it halfway through and call it something different. It's the same thing. It's just got a bend in it. A lot of your career sounds like, or at least your early career, was fighting against the inertia of relying on manual testing.
Yeah. The thing about Infuse is that we were always about automation performance. So naturally, that in the early part of our company's career, I would say what I call the Infuse 1.0 days, right, between 2002 and 2009, a lot of the work you pick up is at the end of the project. So you know about a big program of work, and you know it's going to run for 3 years, but your opportunity was going to come 2.5 years down the line, because that's when they were interested in automation.
Yeah.
We never set out to supply, you know, what we call, you know, 2 bob a penny testers, right, or 2 cent testers, you may call them in the US, right? You know, which is, you know, here's a bunch of testers, they're all manual, they'll follow this process and they'll execute it and they'll run it 50 times, right? Or however, and we'll scale up. My business vision was never to deliver that. It was to drive innovation by shifting left. And I just felt at the time that my vision and the state of what I call the delivery at the time just wasn't there. And I think now we are in a better aligned place, right? With where IT delivery is going. They want to do agile. They want to do DevOps. They want testers to get involved in the story. There's ceremonies like 3 Amigos, and they're really important. And the teams aren't, you know, 200 people. They're like squads of 10, 12, right? Or even less. And that seems to work better.
I'm going to take a quick, just because you brought up the phrase shift left, and I don't think we've ever defined it on the show so far. What's your notion of what shift left means?
To me, shift left is about looking at the cause and start of quality, right? So, and shift left is all about starting off with quality. And often people think that starts off with requirements, and it does, right? But actually, my view starts off with architecture, right? That starts off the notion of, you know, you could have a duff architecture and great requirements and not going to be very good, right? And so choices like an integration platform, whether you go ESB or, you know, or whether you go or something else, right, will make big decisions, big impact on your applications, right? So, you know, you could go something like a Confluence, or you could go for a traditional ESB platform, and you know, you could scupper your great program just through that architectural choice, right? And that's not necessarily a requirement or business requirements based decision. To me, the shift left that's where it starts. It's about implementing quality decisions, choices, and requirements throughout the software engineering process.
Right. So we're shifting that quality behavior left through, if we consider the life cycle of a product from left to right, we're shifting the quality ideas as far left as we can, and actually throughout the whole thing, just smearing quality all over the place.
Correct. Yeah. 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 Not like a Nutella, but you know, but yeah. But yeah, I think the buy-in for quality needs to come in at a business level. If you were going to buy a house, you wouldn't say build it with crap material or bridge, right? So even a minister would say, okay, you know, we would have input into the quality of some of those decisions. In IT, an executive, a finance person, or an CEO will kind of, you know, not have an input into that decision, and should be a little bit accountable for those quality decisions, right? So you're right. So it is smearing quality up the chain and making everyone accountable as a team for that quality output.
I think of it also as being able to utilize, starting to build the test automation as soon as you can, because it will, then you can use it as regression. You can keep running it. And the other thing is around that is you can discover problems and solve them when you have enough time to solve them, like API decisions. Sometimes if you've already got partner companies looking at your product, maybe that's too late to change an API. So you want to be testing far earlier than that. One of the other things that you brought up in the conversation was the two titles, developer and tester. And I kind of think of those as merging into one, but there's a lot of companies that still have those very separate.
Yeah. I used to have a guy when I was first developing, I was writing APIs for a cider company called Bulmers. They make a cider called Strongbow in the UK. It's quite famous. And I was writing these APIs for them or interfaces as they were at the time, right, in the lab. And every time there was a defect in my code, the tester used to come up and he used to always dress like in the Blues Brothers black suit, yeah? And when he found a defect, he used to put on the hat, put on the shade, and come over to my desk, right? And that was kind of a good, fun way of kind of doing testing, right? He'd come over, you see him coming in the corner of your eye. He was quite a robust chap, right? Big chap. And you see him walking towards you and you're like going, damn, he's found something, right? And so the aim was always like, I don't want him to put in the hat and glasses. But it was quite good fun working in that type of environment. There is a melding of the two, you know, and people have called it estet. I think there still needs to be some separation though, right? Because they are two different qualities, right? Because you've got the person that writes the code, and you've got the person that kind of needs to validate that the code is written to requirements, meets the user story, is written in a good way, you know, the unit test is well written and executed, and then looks at it from a different point of view. And I don't think this is particularly a mindset issue. It's more of a focus issue in a mode where you're creating code and you're writing functions that you need to go in a certain way. So I think the line of separation is I think there is what I call this, there is this merger of the two, but I still think there's a separation of roles within the team of the quality engineer and the developer and the software engineer. I advocate myself that people should have the skills to do all the roles. And also, there's no harm in people swapping roles, right? In terms of context switching.
Yeah.
All those roles. Yeah. Well,
so maybe the roles, maybe it does make sense to have the roles still there in some cases, but the skill sets are very, very similar, because with automated testing, the person writing the tests is writing software. They're just writing software to test other software.
Correct. I'm in violent agreement.
There's some companies that treat, like you said, an estet sort of thing, software developer and test. And that's thought of in some companies as a superset, like somebody that has all the software skills, but they also have this testing mindset that is good, and they know how to do all of that and talk with people. There's communication skills as well that go along with that. So it's a superset. But there's other companies still, I think, or at least there have been that I've seen in my past career, that still think of the software testing role as a lower thing. But maybe that's just a US thing and not a international.
It isn't, Brian. It's definitely here and definitely in India. Because so, that's where we're hiring, right? So I think it's an international thing. I think there is, you know, we have seen some of our estates leave and say, I want to be a developer. So you are writing code, but I want to write apps, you know? So I've lost talent to, you know, inverted commas, the development community, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, but you learned code in Fuse, right? Doing automated tests, you're a developer, right? Like, well, I want to code, right? And I'm like, I guess it's just a question of, there's a bit of a mindset issue, but I think also within, you know, the challenges for the big companies that have you know, teams of testers or lots of testers, you know, what I call those, not the small companies because they're a bit more adaptable, but, you know, what I call the medium and larger companies, they've got these reams of testers with lots of business knowledge. They've been there lots of years, and they need to repurpose these people, right, into this modern world of smaller teams and iterative life cycles. So there's some of that, right? I think there's just going to be a natural shift over time where I think these things will move. So, you know, if in our product team at Use Mango, we don't have a classic tester role. All developers do testing. So, you know, we've got, yeah, all six of them, they all do testing, right? There's no tester classic role, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And they all do DevOps. And, you know, so they all do infrastructure as code. They all do development and they all do testing. I have on occasion, yeah, you know, gone to our principal product architect. I've said, do you need a tester? And he goes to me, we're all testers. I'm like, okay. That's, you know, so, yeah. And they're doing stuff, right?
Do I need another person? Yes, I'll take another person.
I'll take another person. Yeah. I'll take another person, and they've got to be, you know, they've got to do all roles, right?
Sounds great. And actually, I think it's more fun because there's times I like to jump back and forth. I do both. I think they're both fun. And some days I'm feeling like being picky and writing a bunch of tests. And sometimes I feel like I need to just focus on the C++ code and stuff like that. So, but the one of the things I was curious about is this. I want to make sure that we cover a couple of things. One of them is really what is automated tested? How is automated testing different than manual? And then also, how are we doing in your view of it, the world, as much as you can determine? Are we getting better as a whole, as a software development community, in doing test automation? Let's start with what it is. If somebody, like you said, used to get hired at the end and people would say, automate our tests.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So automated testing and still is today, which we'll, I know we'll cover a little bit in your point, but, you know, automated testing. And I've heard the phrase DevOps in North American customers and the UK by both nationality, effectively being regression testing. Yeah, mainly around the UI. What I call the upside down pyramid, right, where there's a low coverage of unit tests, low coverage of API tests, and testing validation is done through the black box, which is normally through the UI, typically done by business users or by specific manual testing specialists using text written scripts, using written procedures, executing the same thing again and again and again. And so when I've heard automated testing and automated testing projects that we sold for that first 7-8 years, right? I've got 400 regression test scripts, automate them. I run them once a quarter, once a month, whatever it is. And I want to get that time down and free up these resources. That's kind of automated testing has been. Now it covers the whole facet of classes of tests, not to be confused by the English class thing that one's better than the other, but, you know, different types of testing, right? You know, so you got the unit test covers the smallest increment of code, typically white box written by a developer. You've got the API testing, and then you've got still some UI testing, but it's normally quite basic. And then you've got the concept of end-to-end, which is kind of your traditional black box UI testing. But the premise of that being that you have a larger coverage towards the bottom of that pyramid in unit and API and system testing, and then a less coverage from the end-to-end perspective, depending on the you know, things like unit test coverage and also business confidence, right? And then typically from that point of view, you still get the UAT phase, especially on large projects. Businesses will still want to do their UAT to validate that those processes fit their purpose, right?
UAT, what's that?
That's user acceptance testing, yeah? Normally done by business users, right?
Okay.
So that's typically still done outside sprint, right? In large programs anyway, that I see. So that's kind of what I see. The other thing I've seen is what we call the mullet. I don't know the mullet is, you know, kind of got short thing in the front and long flowy bits at the back, which is what we call agile at the front and waterfall at the back, yeah? And I call that the mullet methodology, right? So, you know, you do your unit testing, your system testing, typically within your agile sprint. It then drops out into what I call a system integration testing and UAT as a horrific word. They call it sprint, but, you know, I'm going to call it the waterfall bit. Yeah. where you do system integration and UAT, and they follow. And then if there's any defects raised, it goes back into the sprint, right, as backlog item.
Oh, I love that. I've also heard water wheel. That might be different, but so the water wheel was requirements go in, and then a Scrum team pretends that they're doing Agile, and then they spit it out to the tester at the end.
A CIO about 5 years ago talked about, we're not doing Agile with a capital A, we're doing Agile with a small a. It was a very interesting education in the alphabet of capitalization. I have no clue what he was talking about, right? I just went, yeah, okay, whatever, mate. Yeah.
All right.
He was from one of those large system integrated companies where, you know, they have a lot of phrases thrown at him, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, mullet. I like the mullet method. I'm going to use that.
That's kind of how I've seen test automation kind of go the ways. In terms of what we see now in terms of projects, we see a combination of both, actually. We see a demand for SDET to join Scrum teams to kind of become to help out in testing backlog. We also see people who are transitioning to waterfall, but they've got a legacy of end-to-end tests in the UI. So they're trying to do that sort of regression test, automate that regression test, while trying to keep all the new tests automated as well. The other thing I've seen is that I've seen within Scrum team, they've changed the sort of approach and just changed the organization, but the people refuse to change, right? So, you know, I've heard developers saying, I'm not writing unit tests. Because that stops me creating,
yeah.
Which kind of buggers up things, really, right? Sideways, because it's like, okay, well, you still want to create the same way. That happens as well. So there's all sorts of funny vagaries that, you know, even if you're doing capital A Agile or lowercase a Agile or whatever it is, right, that the people still don't change, right? I think a lot of people, as I speak to execs, I always say, if you can't change the people, right? Because,
yeah. Interesting. I haven't heard that before, Ed. I had heard before, if you can't change your company, then change your company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a quick question. What would you describe as an agile team, agile transformation system? I read it, I hear it about it a lot. I see it a lot. How would you describe it?
Agile Manifesto happened, I don't know, not 80s, 90s. And there were a lot of people trying to work on lightweight processes, like similar to Scrum was one of them, but there's many that fall under this category. These are basically reactions to waterfall and reactions to the idea of doing massive design up front and then developing. So the more notion, it's an iterative process. So really a lot of people think of all of the iterative processes as sort of agile, because we can take a little bit of the requirements that we've got and fine tune them, implement them, and do what I think of an agile team as somebody that's doing testing throughout development. And then biting off a little piece of the requirements at a time, making sure these are clean, and always having DevOps is kind of part of it, is always having a working solution throughout the whole thing. But really what an agile team is some people say, if I'm using Jira, I'm an agile team. Nalin, do you have a different take on this?
Yeah, anyone using Kanban, right? They could be using Trello and they're like an agile team as well, right? So, you know. Or anyone that uses a post-it note. I've got post-it notes now, so therefore I'm agile, right? I have seen it. I have seen it that ridiculous. I agree with you, Brian. It's really, the point around agile is a set of practices to kind of create small releases of working product. So rather than spending, you know, $5 million and 19 months and the business has changed, right? So, you know, creating the ordering system for Blockbuster while Netflix taken over the world is probably not what you want to be spending your money on, right? Then it's about recognizing those changes in need and adapting to it.
For me, being able to adapt is a key part of it, because that's where the name Agile kind of comes from, is agility of being able to change course quickly. If any process during the fight, like an end-to-end test or close to end-to-end, if you're using an API and you find that it's clunky and you want to change the API, if there's no way to do that because of all the process involved, I don't think you can consider yourself agile. That's a personal litmus test of my own. So
you're right, Brian. And I see a lot of people saying there's a lot of what I call a mispronunciation of agile. And I think the point around it is not to create huge layers of bureaucracy, right? There's things like in agile that do create layers of bureaucracy, like scale, right? I have been to many a customer where, you know, I speak about scale agile. When I say scale agile. I mean it in the literal way. We're going to do agile across many teams. But obviously, safe, people think it means safe. And I've had violent reactions from many a customer going, if you're implementing safe here, mate, I'm going.
Yeah, it's way more red tape than we had before agile.
And I think people that I can see when you're spanking lots and lots of money as a CFO and a CEO, you want to know where it's going. But I think agile still has the lean process. It's just about making those tools come together and report in the right way without having these massive layers of bureaucracy, right?
Yeah. Do you think we're winning the battle?
That's a really good question. I go to some customers and I feel yes, right? And then I go to some customers and feel, I think in terms of where we are, we winning the battle? I think it is. I think it's slow. It's happening. It's going to take a while, right? Because there's a vested interest among people, right? And I think some of it also comes from our corporate culture as well. And it's not to be a political thing, but, you know, if you go in as a CIO or CTO, you're in for an amount of terms. You want to hit a number of metrics, whatever it is, low cost, you know, lowered cost, offshore labor arbitrage, or hit this business metric, and then you're off ski. And so inevitably, the lack of long-term stability within organizations and agile winning in its truest form. I mean, and reasons why companies like Facebook and Amazon do it is because they've got a leader who's been there 10, 20 years, right? And driving that process. And they keep their teams together for a long time as well. So inevitably, there's always going to be limitations, right? Just by the nature of the economies that we run, right? That's not political broadcast. It's just the reality of what we are, right? In this, that's what I think prevents agile from being really successful. Right? You know, to get it really efficient, you need to keep teams together, and that's not just, you know, that's not just teams developing product. That's entire teams, right? Organizations. And there's probably just a bit too much flux sometimes, right?
I think eventually we'll get there. I think we need to do better about teaching test processes and stuff like that to people right when they're learning code in boot camps. We should teach it then, and learning code in school, we should teach them then. And then the entire culture eventually will change. We have similar thoughts on this, and I think we could BS for hours on this, and especially if we could kick our feet up with a couple pints, be awesome. But I do want to kind of wrap things up. I want to give you the opportunity, because I really appreciate your time. I'd like you to tell us what Infuse offers people, where they can find more, and just pitch. Sort of thing.
No worries, Brian. Yeah. So Infuse is a modern software delivery company. As you may have heard in this podcast, we started off in automation and performance testing. And one thing about test automation is that it brings you all sorts of interesting challenges, right? You find out about test environments, you find out about test data, so naturally that leads you into DevOps and test data management, test environment management, and then even architecture. So we're now what I would call a quality engineering company. We help businesses transform into modern software practices. And we've implemented a lot of companies going apply these practices, migrating to cloud, moving to function as a service, implementing test automation. And then while we've been on that journey, we've also created a scriptless test product called Use Mango. So that enables your non-technical tester to enable to get grips with tools like Selenium and be able to work with a ready-made framework out of the box. Be able to drive and build automated web tests or tests on their mobile phones, and essentially enables those people with regression tests to drive to automate that testing, right? Because that backlog still does exist in the industry. So that's what we do. You know, we're based in UK and in India. We're headquartered in London, and we've got offices in Pune and Bangalore as well. And we have was in the US as well. So I guess we are international, probably. Yeah, I would say US, Europe, and Middle East. Yeah. But I would say that I'd like to think of the company as big enough to deliver, but small enough to care, right? And that's what we do.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you.
No worries, yeah.
And thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
No worries, Brian. Yeah, I just thought I'd throw in, infuse.it is our URL. So if you need more information, feel free to go there.
Yeah. And if somebody's just curious to talk or somehow contact you, do you have any way that people can ask you a question or anything?
I'm available on LinkedIn, right? Typing in Nalin probably isn't very helpful. For my non-Anglo-Saxon audience, my surname is the differentiator. So, you know, I'm the only only one of two Pabus on Google in the planet. There's someone else that's all the spelling of my surname too. But Papa Alpha Romeo Bravo Hotel Uniform. My name's Nalin. You can reach out with me on LinkedIn. You can contact me on the website as well.
What we do is we've got guest bios on our website. And so people can check the show notes and click your picture and they can get that link right there. So we'll put that right there.
Norris. Brilliant, Brian. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you, both of you, for being on the show.
Cool.
Thank you for listening to Test and Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.